Dhamma ki jai, Mathura Dhamma ki jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma ki jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhakti Rinda ki jai, Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Mukhtaya Shri Ratan Bhakti Vinata Swami Yuti Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Ramani Pachani Nirvasi Sisri Vadi Paskachaya Vesatari. Monday, Ham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Stat Shri Rupam Sadhujatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sidivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Stat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
That's February 1st, 2013, in Durban, South Africa. And we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 11, Texts 1 through 5. Do you have the verses or no?
It's not on our sheet.
It's not on your sheet. Okay. So I'll read text one. Sri Shanaka Uvacha Ate Mamartam Prichamo Bhavantam Bhag. Do you want to try repeating? Want to try? Yes? Sri Shanaka Uvacha.
Sri Shanaka Uvacha.
Ate Mam Artam Prichamo.
Ate Mam Artam Prichamo.
Bhavantam Bahuvitamam.
Bhavantam Bahuvitamam.
Samasta Tantra Radhante.
Samasta Tantra Radhante.
Bhavan Bhagavata Tatvavit.
Bhagavata Tatvavit.
Sri Sanaka Uvacha.
Sri
Sanaka
said.
Ata.
Ata.
Now.
Nah.
Imam. This.
Yes.
Artam.
Matter.
Prajamaha. We are inquiring about. Bhavantam. From you. Bahu Vittamam. The possessor of the broadest knowledge. Samasta. Of all. Tantra. The scriptures prescribing practical methods of worship. Radha Ante, in the definitive conclusions, Bhavan, you, Bhagavata,
Bhagavata,
a great devotee of the Supreme Lord,
Lord.
Tatvavit, the knower of the essential facts. Translation. Sri Sonika said, O Sutta, you are the best of learned men and a great devotee of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, we now inquire from you about the definitive conclusion of all Tantra scriptures. Text 2 to 3. All good fortune to you. Please explain to us, who are very eager to learn, the process of Kriya Yoga practiced through regulated worship of the Transcendental Lord, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune. Please also explain how the Lord's devotees conceive of his limbs, associates, weapons, and ornaments in terms of particular material representations. By expertly worshiping the Supreme Lord, a mortal can obtain immortality. The Sanskrit is marcha yayat amarcha tam. Text 4. Sutta Goswami said, offering obeisances to my spiritual masters, I shall repeat to you the description of the opulences of Lord Vishnu given in the Vedas and Tantras by great authorities, beginning from lotus-born Brahma. Text 5. The universal form, Virat, of the personality of Godhead includes the nine basic elements of creation, starting with the unmanifest nature and their subsequent transformations. Once this universal form is instilled with consciousness, the three planetary systems become visible within it. Purport. The nine basic elements of creation are Prakriti, Sutra, Mahatattva, false ego, and the five subtle perceptions. The transformations are the 11 senses and the five gross material elements. So Shanika wants to know Radha, that's not like Radharani, different spell. Radha Ante. He wants to know the definitive conclusions. And he wants to know Tattva. He wants to know the truth. He wants something truthful. He wants something authentic. So all human beings, not only human beings, not even animals, want something authentic. Like if you have some artificial sweetener, you know, a candy made with aspartame or whatever they call that, the ants won't go to it. It's not authentic. So every living entity wants something that's real, wants something that's true. And the conclusion, we want, what is the main point? Where are we getting to? Now, of course, what's interesting is that Shanaka Rishi, understandably, by this time, we're in the 12th canto, already has a good idea of what is the conclusion and what is the absolute truth. Because his question is not just general. He's not just saying, please tell me the truth. Please tell me the conclusion. Give me something real. But he's asking very specifically about the truth. He asks here for the Lord who is Kevalasya, who is a pure spirit, Shriyapati, who's the husband of the goddess of fortune, his Anga and his Upanga, his limbs and his secondary limbs, which here is translated as his associates. Ayudha, Yudha means fight. What are his weapons, like the Sudarshan disc? Akalpam, what are his ornaments? So he's asking not just, tell me about the truth, but he's asking, tell me the specifics about, well, someone who has limbs and ornaments must be a person. So he already knows that the absolute truth is a person. And he's not just asking for the truth, but how to achieve the truth. He's asking what is the process, which is translated here as Kriya Yoga. And if we look in the Sanskrit, we see also Kriya Yoga Bhubhushitam. And again, Kriya. Kriya means activity. What are the activities by which I can achieve the truth? What is the truth? What are the activities by which I can achieve the truth? And then what will I get? Marcho yayat amarchayam. So even an ordinary mortal like us can become immortal. So he already has a pretty good idea, although his description of the goal is very vague. But he already has a pretty good idea of what is the absolute truth, what is the conclusion, what is, there's some process to get there, and when you get there, you achieve immortality. And certainly, again, by this point in the Bhagavatam, he knows all of these things to a very large extent. So what is he really asking for? And it's interesting that he's asking for, here, how to conceive of the conclusion of everything, the authentic truth, in terms of the material manifestation. Now, of course, this has already been described where in the Bhagavatam? Where in the Bhagavatam is there a meditation on the Lord as the universe? Yes. So in one sense, he's already been given this information, but he's eager to hear more on this topic. Now, this topic is very relevant for anyone who is martya, anyone who is subject to death. Of course, none of us are really subject to death. Ajo, nitya, shastrato, yam purano, nahanyate, hanyamane, shivire. None of us actually die. But still, those of us who are in a body that's subject to death, this seeing the Lord in the world of matter is very relevant. Why? Because when you're in materialistic consciousness, how are you going to see the Lord in his original spiritual form? If we say, okay, meditate on Krishna, it becomes difficult, right? You're going about your daily business, whether you're living in the temple. I guess, does everyone here who's in this room now live in the temple, or any of you work outside? Are you all temple residents, pretty much?
No.
Not all?
No.
You work out?
Not much.
Huh?
I live outside.
You live outside. Do you work at a job?
No.
So whether you live in the temple or you live outside, and even those of us who live in the temple, we have to be guiding those who live outside. When people come and say, okay, I have a job, I go to school, I have my family, how do I meditate on Krishna? If we just say, well, you just, you know, scrub Krishna's pots and go distribute Krishna's books, I'm going to say, well, wait a minute, that's not my life. But even for us living, even for those of us who live in the temple, still, is it that easy to just remember Krishna in his spiritual form 24 hours a day? Prabhupada was asked in Hawaii, do you make faster advancement living in the temple than living outside? There was a time in the Hare Krishna movement where our idea of Kanista, Madhyama, and Uttama was according to geography. if you slept in the temple building, you were more advanced than if you slept across the street. And Prabhupada answers, that depends on whether or not his mind is on another subject matter. So one can be in the temple scrubbing the pots and so forth and not be thinking of Krishna. In fact, it's quite interesting in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna gives the progression. You all know that progression? Text 8, what does he say? You should just... No. You have Bhakti Shastri classes here, right? I think we're having a graduation on Sunday. So, chapter 8, very important verse. That Krishna says, always think of me with love. And Bhaktivinoda Thakura comments that right, Krishna is referring there to Raganuga Bhakti. Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. Where you're always absorbed in Krishna and love. And then text 9, Krishna says, if you can't do that, then... What is the next level? If you can't always think of Krishna and love, then...
Offer yourself.
That's 10. But before that, there's a middle one. That's 10. Before that, there's a middle one. I mean, come on, guys, you should know this practically. If you can't always think of Krishna and you're above just working for Krishna, what are you engaged in?
Union activities. Activities, engaging activities.
Yes, what activities?
Yes.
Sadhana Bhakti, which in the 12th chapter is called Abhyasa Yoga. So the essence of Sadhana Bhakti, which may surprise you, is thinking of Krishna. In the Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada says sadhana bhakti starts with thinking of Krishna. So what is the difference between sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, and Raganuga sadhana bhakti? Because Krishna says in the 8th verse, always think of me. And then in the 9th verse of chapter 12, he says, if you can't think of me, do Abhyasa Yoga. But what is that practice? That's practice to think of Krishna. And all of our activities, our deity worship, our japa, our scrubbing the pots, our distributing books, or taking care of our family, anything, or to help us think of Krishna. That's the essence of all regulated principles that Rupa Goswami gives, that one should always... What's the essence of all regulated principles? I shouldn't always remember Krishna, never forget him. And all the other rules are just to facilitate that. They're servants of that rule. All right, suppose you say, well, I can't do that. I can't keep pulling my mind back. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments then on text 9. He said, maybe while you're doing all your services, you just can't control your mind at all. Then text 10, which some of you already said, is? Offer Krishna the results. Work for Krishna. Do some work for Krishna. That means basically following the process of sadhana bhakti just externally. Just with the body. Instead of the body and the mind. Really, sadhana bhakti... in Uttam Bhakti, according to Rupa Goswami, is Anushilanam, and Shilanam has two parts, the body and the mind. So if one is not yet engaged on the platform of the mind, then really, technically speaking, you haven't really started Sadhana Bhakti. You're on the platform of working for Krishna. Which Vishnunath Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary on text 10, will lead you to thinking of Krishna. How? Because you'll get peace. By offering the results of your activities to Krishna, you'll get the peace that's needed to control the mind. So if we want to be firmly on the process of bhakti, we have to be endeavoring to think of Krishna. The sadhana bhakti means abhyasa yoga. Abhyasa means practice. And literally it means to repeat. Whenever you practice anything, what are you doing? You're repeating it. over and over and over again. And what are we repeating in sadhana bhakti? Pulling the mind back to think of Krishna. Again, all the things we do with our external senses are designed to facilitate us internally to keep pulling the mind back, as explained in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and fix it on the self. And this practice of Abhyas Yoga eventually leads to the point where we can think of Krishna constantly. And of course, it's not just in boxes, it's a continuum. There's a continuum from Vaidhi Sadhana to Raganuga Sadhana. Okay, well, how are we going to do that? How are we going to keep pulling our mind back to think of Krishna? And this is the question being asked here. And it's being asked here in relationship to what we're encountering with our senses. With my senses, I'm encountering wood and air, sky and trees and water, right? That's what I'm encountering. With my material senses, I'm not encountering Krishna having a picnic with the cowherd boys by the bank of the Yamuna. Atashi Krishna Namani Nabhaved Graham Indriya. Is that correct? So we normally think about what we encounter with our senses, don't we? Isn't that what we usually think about? What am I going to eat today? How am I going to deal with this difficult person? How am I going to go on time for this appointment? How am I going to buy this thing? How am I going to do this thing? Isn't that mostly the absorption of the mind with what we can perceive with our senses? But the trick is that what we can perceive with our senses is also the body of the Lord. In the 14th chapter of Krishna book, The Prayers of Lord Brahma, Srila Prabhupada comments that Maya is only within the mind. That really everything is connected with Krishna. In one sense, everything is Krishna, which is what was explained in the second canto I'm being about to explain here again. That the world is Krishna's body. He's asking, how can I see Krishna's anga? How can I see his limbs? How can I see his weapons? How can I see his ornaments? And this is going to be described in terms of what we can perceive. How kind Krishna is. That he makes us be able to come to a transcendental platform, to go from martya to amartya, to realize our eternal nature by dealing with our illusory perceptions. Spiritualizing our illusory perceptions. Now, in order to do this, one has to hear about this from someone who's actually experiencing it. Because there are so many people in the world who try to see everything as divine. But you can't just speculate about it. I mean, you can't, as we can't see Krishna in his original spiritual form with our material senses. So we can't even understand how the world is related to God just by our own speculation. We can understand something. Actually, in the second canto, there's one purport, I forget the verse number, where Srila Prabhupada gives a step-by-step instruction of how just using your senses and logic, you can understand something of God. You can understand something. You can understand there must be a creator. The creator must be intelligent. In driving here yesterday from the airport, I was really thinking about Krishna as what I like to call the variety man. Because I came to South Africa from Oman and Dubai and Bahrain, where it's a completely different atmosphere. You know, the only green there is irrigated, and it's irrigated from desalinated ocean water. They have no water. Can you imagine? They have no water. It never rains. So if you're born and grow up there in Oman, you never see rain your whole life. You don't know what it is. Such a different atmosphere. Instead of flowing hills of green, there's jagged hills of rock. But there's a kind of beauty there also. They have opulences there. Oh, they have a different kind of opulence. They have the opulence of oil. And they have, in Oman, They have their frankincense trees, which grow out of solid rock. They don't need soil. Can you imagine that? And they produce the best incense in the world. So that's their opulence. Of course, they also have the ocean. So wherever you go to different places on this planet, and you see such variety. Even sometimes within one country, I mean, America is such a big country that when you go from one place to another, you see such different landscapes, almost like you're on a different planet. What to speak of, I was thinking about this, all the different planets in the universe, each planet has a different atmosphere. Their residents have different bodies, they have different sorts of plants and animals. Yesterday in Pretoria, I saw all these birds I'd never seen before in my life. And just imagine on the different planets what kind of birds are there, what kind of flowers, what kind of everything. And that's just the material world. So with our senses and logic, one can understand God must like variety. Right? There must be a creator. Trees don't just come into being on their own. I mean, that's the modern scientific theory, that there was just some soup, and from the soup came out a one-celled creature, which eventually turned into giraffes and date trees and gorillas, etc. Sounds like a children's fantasy story. But with a little adult intelligence, one can understand that if someone had to make a painting of a flower, then somebody had to make the real flower. So with your intelligence and logic, you can understand there's a creator. The creator really likes variety. How many kinds of mangoes are there? So kinds of fruit, there's mangoes and there's apples. And then kinds of mangoes and there's kinds of apples. He's really into individuality. Each one of us is different from everybody else. There'll never be anyone like us, ever. Never has been, never will be. As Krishna told Arjuna, in the past, in the present, in the future, you, me, and all these kings, he said, have always existed. That means we've existed as individuals. That means we have our own personality. It's not just that we're separately located in space. We have our likes and dislikes. We have our favorite food. We have our favorite colors. We have our favorite activities. We have, right? So we can understand all these kinds of things about God. What else can we understand about God? He really likes order. Very orderly. How the planets are moving is very orderly. But he also likes surprises. You know, the Earth's very stable, but maybe there's an earthquake. The ocean stays in its boundaries, but maybe there's a tsunami. So he likes order and he likes surprises. So many things. But there's a limit as to what one can understand. One can understand quite a lot just by senses and logic without superior guidance. But you come to a limit. And therefore, Shanika's asking, he's saying, you're the best, Bhavan Bhagavataha. You are a Bhagavataha and Tattvavit. Vit means to know. You actually know the truth. And not only do you know the truth, but your attitude towards the truth is one of devotion. Because although we can understand quite a lot through our senses and logic, I mean, sometimes going through that purport, you can take a group of people new to Krishna consciousness and you can, just with senses and logic, get them quite far in understanding who's God. But there's a limit. I mean, even if I want to know you, I can know something about you. Maybe I can look up your biography on the internet or something like that. I can observe you. But if I really want to know any of you, I have to get your permission. Correct? We reveal ourselves to people we trust. Ever reveal yourself to somebody and find out you couldn't trust them? Actually, I had an incident not very long ago. I was speaking with some devotees who were running a certain project, and they were asking me if I wanted to get involved. And this was in India, and they were Indians from India, which I think is a little different culture than Indians who've been third, fourth generation in South Africa. And I'm, as you can hear from my accent, an American. And not only an American, I'm from New York. So we're accustomed to saying what we mean and meaning what we say. We don't do diplomacy very well in New York. And the people I was talking to were accustomed to diplomacy. So they asked me about how I wanted to work, and I said how this is the way I'd like to work. And what happened was they figured that I wasn't being straightforward. They assumed that I wasn't being straightforward. And they read into it all kinds of things that I didn't say. It was quite interesting. And I thought, okay, I revealed a little bit about myself, and then they just took it and used it against me in some other way. It was very interesting. So we have this experience that we reveal something about ourselves to somebody, and they end up using it to hurt us. They end up using it to criticize us. This person wrote me an email using what I had said to criticize me. So it was very interesting. But Krishna's not so foolish. I may be foolish. I may not know who to trust, or I may not be aware of cultural differences or something like that. Krishna's not that foolish. So he reveals himself to the devotee. Therefore, only the devotee can really give us information about how to meditate on Krishna beyond what we can perceive with our senses. Even the impersonalists, they have to have some bhakti in order even to achieve Brahman realization. Krishna has to trust them at least a little. Krishna is very soft. You know that, right? His skin's so soft that if he just touches a leaf, it changes color. You read that in the Nectar Devotion. It describes he's soft like butter. And in Krishna's original form, he doesn't even kill demons. He's just very kind and loving. So there's all sorts of processes to keep rascals from knowing too much about him. Therefore, one has to have actual love. One has to be a devotee. So if we want to know something about how to meditate on Krishna in the world, we have to ask a devotee. And a devotee who's not just a beginning devotee, but tattvavit. Bhavan Bhagavata tattvavit. Someone who's experiencing it. It's all right to say something theoretically, if that's all you have. But we should come to realize knowledge. We should go to one who has realized knowledge, and we should ourselves get realized knowledge. Now, with this realized knowledge from one who loves Krishna, this is also given, of course, to someone that can be trusted. So the great devotees, they don't reveal everything to everyone. And of course, Srila Prabhupada is very interesting in that he had us distribute his books, even Nectar Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anchalila, out on the street to everybody. Someone asked me the other day, a fairly new devotee, can I read the Nectar of Devotion? And I said, well, I used to sell the Nectar of Devotion to the airports to meat eaters. So I'm sure you can read it. But of course, what Srila Prabhupada has done, and what Krishna himself does, Krishna does, Kaviraj, is although you can get the book until you're at a certain level of purity, it's sort of hidden. Have you noticed that as you advance, things reveal themselves to you from the books? There's kind of layers. And as your consciousness clears, you go back and read the same book and you're like, wow, that's what it says. And there's deeper and deeper meanings. And Krishna Das Kaviraj describes this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, I'm writing about intimate things that shouldn't be spoken of, but I know that the camel-like non-devotees won't understand what I'm writing anyway. But generally, one gives higher truths to one who is qualified. So Krishna and the Acharyas may do that by having magical books that reveal themselves to one who is qualified. They're not just ink on paper. But one should also be careful. That's one of the offenses, right? To preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless. Or as Prabhupada says in talking about the austerities of speech, one can speak heavy truths only to one's students. One shouldn't be teaching unpalatable truths to those who are not one's students. In other words, those who are not receptive. So although it's not particularly stated here, it's understood that Shaunaka Rishi and the sages are also qualified to hear. And it's indirectly indicated in the very specific nature of Shaunaka's questions. That he's not just saying, give me the conclusion, give me the truth, but he's saying, please tell me how to meditate on the form of the husband of the goddess of fortune. Please tell me how to meditate on his limbs. Please tell me how to meditate on his ornaments. So he's coming already with a certain amount of knowledge and realization. So we're not, in today's verses, going to much of the actual substance of this realization, just in text 5 a little bit, that the universal form includes 9 basic elements, starting with the unmanifest, their subsequent transformations. What I found most interesting about this verse is once this universal form is instilled with consciousness, the 3 planetary systems become visible within it. So the universal form has consciousness. Sa-chit-ke. The universe is conscious. The universe is conscious. So, of course, most of the ancient societies of the world had some idea of that, didn't they? That the Earth was a conscious being, which we know as Bhumi. She's Lord Varaha's wife, Lord Narayan's wife. The planet is alive. The planet's not just some rocks. It's alive. The universe is alive. The universe is actually a living form of God. So, as that's all we've gotten to today, that can be our meditation for today. That everything we're dealing with is ultimately Krishna's spiritual energy. As we said before, Maya is only within the mind. Seeing things as separate from Krishna is Krishna's definition of Maya. That which appears to be a value, if it has no relation to me, has no reality, know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So everything we're dealing with is ultimately Krishna's energy. And even the material elements, even the parts of the universe, are all really parts of the conscious, living body of the Lord. Just like when Srila Prabhupada was talking to Hayagriva, and Hayagriva moved something with his foot. You all know this story? No? Prabhupada said, no, don't move anything with your foot. It wasn't like beads or Bhagavatam or something. It was something. I can't remember what it was. Huh? Might have been. Some ordinary object. Prabhupada said, don't move it with your foot. And Hayagriva said, if I can't do that, I might as well cut off my foot. And Prabhupada said, yes. So why this sense? Because it's conscious, actually. Krishna is conscious, and this universe is his body. This is the real ecological mentality, huh? That the whole universe is the body of the Lord. Then it's not just I'm using it in Krishna's service, but how am I using it? What is my attitude towards it? Part of Krishna's body. Everything I'm dealing with is part of Krishna's body. So, of course, if we can think about Krishna's Vrindavan Lila, Dwarka Lila, Ramachandra's Lila, or his avatar's Lila, and form and qualities directly, that is very good. And in sadhana bhakti, we should be pulling our mind to back over and over again to such things. But if we find that difficult, at least we can meditate that this universe, everything here, Prakriti, Mahatattva, false ego. The 11 senses. Our own senses are part of Krishna's body. Is that interesting? Well, that's the philosophical basis by which we're supposed to use our senses in the service of the master of the senses, Rishikesha, Rishikena Sevana Bhakti Uchite. Why should I use my senses to serve Krishna? They're my senses. No, they're part of Krishna's body. So there has to be some endeavor. The word used twice is kriya. Kriya means activity. On the advanced platform, that endeavor is spontaneous and natural out of love. There's a devotee, actually there's many devotees doing this, but there's a particular devotee who's consulting with me about getting married. And the last time I talked to him, I said, Prabhu, it's very obvious that you should be married. And he said, okay, but I don't want to work. I I said, well, maybe you could find some really Brahminical woman who'd just, you know, be happy with a sleeping bag on the floor. Anyway, he wrote me again recently and he said, now I found somebody. And now all of my hesitancies about working are gone. You know, that in all civilized societies, the way that most men are civilized is they're given a wife at a young age. Now this is all being thrown in the trash can. Now people are told don't get married till you're 30, 35. But used to be, Prabhupada said the highest age for marriage was 24. Men should be married by 24. So why did you get a young man married? Because as soon as he's in love with a woman, he'll be responsible and he'll want to work. A real renunciate is somebody who has the energy for working without the energy from the opposite sex. They have their own energy for being fully engaged in Krishna's service. They don't need some woman saying, ah, in order for them to work. But my point is that if you have love, you automatically have energy for action. That's my point. When there's no love, when this man didn't actually like anybody, he didn't want to get a job. And when he actually loved somebody, immediately he wanted to get a job. So on the higher platform of bhakti, there's spontaneous attraction for Krishna, and then one naturally wants to engage the senses in his service. But for those of us who are trying to come to that point, who are trying to realize our immortality, marcho yayam amartyayam, it's not exactly that we become immortal, but we realize our immortality. Wouldn't that be nice to realize your immortality? Wouldn't that be nice? To realize that we're not going to die, that we can't get hurt, that we can't get cheated, that we can't get anything, that we're an invulnerable soul. Wouldn't that be nice? And have no fear. So those of us who are still trying to realize that, we have to make an effort. Abhyas yoga, practice, repetition. Okay, how am I going to meditate now on Krishna? How am I going to meditate now on Krishna? How am I going to meditate now on Krishna? So here we have at least one possibility. This particular possibility may not inspire some of you individually, but here there's one possibility. That the universe is the body of God and that it is imbued with consciousness. Just like Queen Kunti said, you're the soul of the universe. Talk about the super soul. The universe is a big body, and the soul of that universe is the Lord. And we are all little parts in that body, like little cells in my body are part of my body. And everything I'm dealing with is part of this body of the Lord. And because he's conscious, he's aware of everything that's happening with all the what we perceive as material elements. And how could we understand this without going to Bhagavata Tattvavit, without going to somebody who actually loves Krishna, who Krishna actually trusts, to reveal this knowledge? And when we meditate like this, then we will have something authentic. Because seeing the world as separate from Krishna is an illusion. It's not the real thing. We're getting something phony. That's the definition of maya, that which is not. It looks real and substantial, but as soon as we see it separate from Krishna, it's not what it appears to be. And as soon as I see it in relationship to Krishna, then I'm dealing with something authentic. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements, corrections. Yes.
I was appreciating a lot about the point of trust.
Mm.
And I was thinking, how do you get to that point of trusting somebody? Don't go through the process of being cheated and then know that you can trust them or not.
Mm. They have to be tested. Yeah, so Krishna is testing us. We think about, I have to have faith in Krishna, but really what's going on here is that Krishna has to have faith in us. Like Prabhupada would quote, you know, don't try to see God, make it so God will want to see you. What's really going on is that Krishna has to trust us. So therefore we're tested. Yes, it's a very good point. And therefore, before taking a guru, one should test. The injunction is for at least 1 year, one should live with the guru. It doesn't mean you have to live in the same room. Ideally, one lives in the same community for a year. You actually test. You're supposed to test. The guru also tests. Prabhupada says the disciple has to pass the test of the guru. The disciple should test the guru. The guru should test the disciple before they sign a contract. And you can go ahead and test Krishna. He doesn't mind. But he's also testing us. Krishna's testing us. You know, in one sense, I mean, here the emphasis is on Kriya. So in one sense, the emphasis is on what I do. But really, what I do is, really what I'm doing is demonstrating to Krishna that I'm trustworthy for him to take me up to the next level. Now, Krishna's not, I'm sorry, this may really hurt your feelings, but Krishna's not really impressed with the building. I mean, I know you guys have one of the nicest buildings in the Hare Krishna movement. But Krishna's not so impressed with gold-colored mirrors. He's got real gold. But he doesn't really need a building. He's got a spiritual world full of Chintamani, conscious buildings. So it's not that we're doing these things, you know, it's not material. All the service we're doing, it's not to say, okay, Krishna, I built your building, distributed 500 books, I cooked 3,000 pieces of burfi, I waved 10,000 sticks of incense. Okay, come on, give me. You know? It's not like that. What we're doing is a framework in which we can get more attached to Krishna and demonstrate that we are trustworthy, that we're lovers of Krishna rather than exploiters of Krishna. And so instead of seeing the world as, oh, that's gross material, unconscious matter that has no concern for how I use it because it's just dead. And I can use it for my purposes. And not only do we see like chairs and cars like that, we even see other people like that. Now think about the meat eaters. How do they see animals? They don't see animals as living beings, do they? They see them as unconscious matter. It goes on between people too. Fourth canto, woman hunting is compared to animal slaughter. So when men exploit women or when women exploit men, it's, oh, there's an object for me to exploit. There's a thing. And the spiritualists see everything as Krishna. Everything's alive. Everything's spiritual. And not only is it spiritual, it's part of Krishna. Therefore, it's used for him. So how do we? What do we do? What do I do with my body? What do I do with my mind? Not my body. It's not my mind. Well, how do I treat other living entities? How do I treat objects? And Krishna's, he's everywhere. He's there in the objects and in the people's hearts that he's seeing. How do you deal with me? How do you deal with me? And he's very kind. I mean, Krishna doesn't expect us to pass all of our tests all the time. You know, I'm like, oh, God, I failed that test. Now it's finished, you know. It's not like that. It's like, and again, I may offend you because it looks like most of you are for Indian descent. The Indians are really bad about this. This was Indian family. There's a little video on YouTube called Indian Parents. And it's true. So in my gurukul, I had this boy 7 years old. You got to watch this video because it's exactly what happened to me. And they came to me with me, and they brought the GBC too to put more pressure on me. And they met with me and they said, we want our son to get a master's degree, 7 years old, okay? I said, okay, fine. But we heard he failed the spelling test. And I looked up the report, and I said, he's gotten all excellence on all those reports, but he failed the test. You know, I had to go back into the records and the drawers and look it up, and I said, yes, it's true. You know, 2 months ago, he failed one spelling test. Well, why do we don't want him in this school? How will he get a master's degree? I said, you know, nobody at the university are going to look at his records from when he was 7 years old. And it's not on the report card he got excellent. I said, nobody from university is going to go in my filing drawers and look up what he got on every single spelling test when he was seven. So it's also like that for us. You know, if you fail a spelling test in Krishna consciousness, it doesn't mean you can't go on to get your master's degree in Krishna consciousness. You don't have to be like some crazy attached parents and be in anxiety like that. But Krishna is always testing us. We should certainly try to pass all the tests. Not that we should just say, well, it's okay if I fail this test. It's okay if I fail. Then after a while, you will fail the whole thing. Certainly. But if we do find that we fail some tests, then we can use that as valuable feedback and say, oh, many years ago, I remember I was going through some difficulty with some devotees. Unusual to do that, right? But anyway, I was going through some difficulty with some devotees. And the difficulty kept accelerating. It got more and more and more difficult. So at first I was very happy and peaceful, and I was going to the meetings, chanting, and as it got tighter, and as the screws got turned tighter and tighter and tighter, and the fire got turned up more and more and more, and eventually I just broke down. I'm like, Krishna, take this away! So that sort of test is also valuable, because then you're getting some feedback. Otherwise you can think, oh yes, I'm Krishna conscious. You know, and Krishna puts you in a situation where you go, oops, I guess I wasn't so Krishna conscious. And then you know what to work on. Make sense? But Krishna's always testing us. Prabhupada says that just to be a street sweeper, you don't need to pass a test. But if you want to be a highly placed government employee, there's so many exams. So we're aiming for the highest. I mean, we're not just aiming for a Brahmin. We're not even just aiming for Vaikuntha. We're aiming to go to Goloka Vrindavan. So that's where Krishna is the softest. Where he's revealing everything about himself. And he's trusting the devotees so much. You know, nobody ties up the Lord in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, nobody says, Krishna, you've been bad. You know, you can't come visit me today. Nobody talks to Lord Narayan like that. But in Vrindavan, they do. So for that, we have to come to the point of full love, where we have no exploitation mentality towards Krishna. And frankly, that's also demonstrated with how we deal with the so-called material energy. But yes, there must be tests, you're right. You can think that somebody's trustworthy until there's a test, then you find out if they really are or not. Without a test, how do you know? Can you know without a test? No. So we shouldn't begrudge Krishna his testing us, huh? We shouldn't say to him, would you quit testing me already? That's required. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Anything else? Yes?
This point, what really struck me is most of the time they see devotees, they just don't have any regard for paraphernalia. They sort of abuse things. And so it's just when you said this, it like really struck me.
Very nice. Well, that's to be expected. We're conditioned souls. And what does a conditioned soul mean? It means we see everything as dead matter for my exploitation. It may take some time. Anybody else? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.